webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Thank you very much, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday, June 22nd, 2010. The only second day of summer 2010 in the history of the world. Welcome in to this special Tuesday night edition of Glenn Klein Online. It is a pre-convention preview coming to you live from Calgary, Canada. We're in the Bay of the Holy Spirit still here in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida, but we're happy to welcome in the president, the founder, and the speaker of the third annual Gospel Revolution Convention in Calgary, Alberta, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn. I guarantee you I am cooler than you.
Well, we all know that, Michael. You're too cool for school, bro.
I know. Oh, no, it is so pleasant up here. Oh, my gosh, it's about 70 degrees, and it's
70 Fahrenheit?
Yes, Fahrenheit. If we were Celsius, I would be calling from hell.
What would be that in Celsius? You know what it is in Celsius?
In Celsius is 20, probably 20 something.
Well, that is very pleasant for the
right around 20,
eve
maybe.
Of the third annual Gospel Revolution Convention in Calgary, Alberta. If you can make it, it starts tomorrow night. And if you are anywhere in what would you call that? West Central Canada?
Yes. Yeah. Alberta is the second province east of British Columbia. We are north.
Well, obviously, if you have not made your plans yet, and you are within driving distance, which we know a lot of, a lot of our listeners do come from Canada. You are within striking distance, so we invite you to come to the webcast or to the convention, and we are cordially inviting you to join Michael and Dick Dobrennan. I'm not going to be there, Michael. I'm still in Tampa.
No, you're
wish
not.
I could have been there.
And this is a disappointment to me, as it will be to others. But, you know, we went through our last pledge drive, and we had, you know, a certain amount that we really, really needed to raise to be able to cover the expenses. So there were plans not only for you to come up, but also to have Jeffrey come up and take care of some things. But we had to backtrack on those plans because we just simply do not have the finances to carry that out. Especially having you here would have, you know, you're always MC these things for me, and that's always very comfortable. But we will have someone here doing those things, and I'm sure we will be fine, but we'll be fine, but we'll miss the Klein.
Well, I appreciate that. I certainly will miss seeing everybody. I know it's going to be a good time. These are some of the financial realities, though, Michael. I mean, it's just it's what we deal with. And the ministry, frankly, just did not have the finances come in over the last pledge drive, as thankful as we are for what did come in. We just couldn't swing it this year.
No, it was just not feasible at all. So yeah, we're straining through some things right now and trying our best to find areas to cut expenses. It's funny how when you start trying to cut expenses, they start going up. But we are we're doing what we can do, and we will make it through this particular time. I know that all of this is still the a part of the reality of the economic collapse that has taken place, not just in the United States but around the world. During 2009, we lost 40% of our regular contributors, and I could tell you that the ones that I know, which I know most all of them personally, were brokenhearted that they had to discontinue their $200 or $150 a month commitments that they had made. But that's just the financial reality that we're in right now. We were also very, very fortunate that there was a couple of people who actually picked up some of that slack, and that has helped to keep things moving just a little bit more smoothly. But you lose 40% of your financial base, and that's a huge chunk. So, but we are still alive.
Yes, we are.
In more ways than one.
Yes, we are. Well, that dovetails nicely into our next point of interest. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, the toll-free number is available to you. Talk to Michael in Canada tonight. Wherever you are, logged on to, if it's a few minutes after 9 o'clock, on the east coast of the U.S. of A., as well as, I suppose, the east coast of Canada. I think the east coast of Canada is on the same time as the east coast of the U.S. of A.
No, actually.
Even over there in Tom and Linda Wilby country in Brunswick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if they are an hour or 2 hours.
Well, if you're listening live, call us. We want to hear from you. 1-800-436-3260. Give us a call. Get on the phone. Let us hear your questions, your comments, your thoughts about anything gospel-related. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran in studio, waiting to take your call. 1-800-436-3260. Our condolences go out to Sean and his family. His grandpa passed away last week.
Yeah.
In St. Louis, and went down for the funeral, or actually went up for the funeral. And the good news for Sean's grandfather and everybody else who passed away in the last several days is they are one with God, and they are at peace with God. That's the good report.
Yes, it is. And my heart goes out to Sean for this loss. I mean, these are things that the human race adapts to the reality of, but there's still that sense of loss, a person you're not going to see at least on this side again. So, John, you did a great job, and I loved it a lot, and my heart's with you in this.
So you had a pretty interesting experience over the last week that is germane to the gospel, or as we like to call it, the psychology of the gospel. This is quite a story, ladies and gentlemen, and for those of you that love Mike and love this ministry and what this represents, you're going to be very interested in this story. So sit up, pay attention, and why don't you tell everybody the genesis of what happened and what we found out yesterday.
Well, it's been over a week ago. It's been almost 2 weeks ago when I was first informed by my physician. She's really a funny lady. I like her a lot. I really like my doctor. And people have seen me out and about over the last couple of years. I have a little Band-Aid that I've always got on the side of my head And for whatever purposes, you know, it's it's caused me, you know, some problems, some difficulties, and it's you know, unsightly, it's blah blah blah, all of these things. And so I went in having to have my blood pressure medication monitored, and you know, what do I need to do, and all of this stuff. So but this is the first time I've brought it up to her, and I told her, I said, well, look at this and tell me what, you know, can I get this? I just was interested in getting it, you know, cut off because it was becoming quite bothersome and unsightly at the same time. And she looked at it, and her quote exactly was, what the hell is this? And
that's always very reassuring when you hear your physician say, what the hell is this?
Yeah, here's your doctor saying this to you, you know. And so I actually got kind of tickled at her, you know. She was, but she was not happy with me at all. And she said, this thing has its own vascular system. This does not look good. And so she scheduled me for a dermatologist to look at it the very next day. And of course, here again is, you know, finances, you know, is staring you in the face. And she was quite alarmed. So the dermatologist actually came to my doctor's office, and I guess they have some kind of thing where preliminary that, you know, she sends him her business and blah, 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 and but he has to come there to her office to do the preliminary to see whether or not he is going to think that something needs to be done. So 2 days later, I had another appointment, and he came in. This has been about a week and a half ago, I suppose, somewhere around there. And so then we had, I'm hearing voices in the background.
Is that that's right, that's right. Just go ahead.
Oh, okay. So here we have the doctor telling, walked out after looking at this thing on my head. By now I'm beginning, the way they're talking about it, I feel like my twin brother is growing on the side of my head or something, you know. And but I heard him step outside the door, and he told my doctor that it is most likely cancer and it needs to be removed immediately. So they scheduled an appointment for me for this past Wednesday, and you know, in my referral paper said possible cancer. My family history is, of course, virtually every relative I have has died of cancer. My mother, my father, my aunts, my uncles, and on down the line. I have three sisters, actually, who have survived cancer already, which is a good thing, good news. So from there, I went in for the surgery, and they removed it. And then when I was getting ready to leave, which they really dug, you know, it wasn't just removal of the surface. They did a pretty deep incision thing, you know. And then when he came back in after I was, the nurse had come in and patched me up and, you know, did what needed to be done. He came back in and he said, Mr. Williams, he said, this will take about a week to get the reports back from the biopsy. We're biopsying this and we'll get the reports back. He says, but I have to tell you that you need to prepare for the worst. Well, and of course, Glenn Klein's question to me was, well, why didn't you ask him what the worst was?
No, I said, I said, well, what does that mean? And you said, I don't know. I didn't ask him. And I said, how the hell do you get that kind of announcement from your doctor? And you don't say, well, what does that mean? What are the parameters of that?
And
Michael's response was, well, you're the interviewer.
Yeah, I'm not Glenn Klein. That's why I didn't ask. Anyway,
So you don't ask the doctor what the worst means, what the implications of that are at all. You just take that information and you go home.
And I also told him at that time, I said, well, you've got to understand, I am leaving for Canada this coming Tuesday. That was on Wednesday of last week. And I told him, I said, I am leaving for Canada, and I do not care what the biopsy report is. I do not care what you have to say about this, where I might be in this. I said, I am going to Canada, and you need to understand that. And he said, well, and this is what he told me. He said, well, he said, then we will have to start scheduling a treatment plan when you get back from Canada. So he's already talking about treatment for cancer.
Right. He said, prepare for the worst.
Prepare for the worst. He said,
so whatever that meant, we were girding ourselves to prepare for the worst. Now, in your mind, when you heard him say that, what did you think that could have possibly meant? Everything from what to what?
Well, it meant everything from, you know, that it, number one, that it is cancer, but possibly they got it removed. But all the way to, you know, it's spread to your brain, and you may be talking next week and start, you know, talking Yiddish to people. I don't know. But, it was really weird. It was irrelevant what it meant, Glenn. I don't know how to describe that. It just, when he said it, I think the reason that I didn't ask any questions at all is because what the worst meant was just completely irrelevant to me.
And those are not just words, ladies and gentlemen. And Jeff can attest to this, being down there in Houston with Michael. I certainly can attest to it, being in daily contact with him. All you cared about was you were going to go to Canada to do the teaching that you are slated to do. And
yeah,
the other
and then
thing, too, that you said several times to me, that all you cared about was not the length of how much time you had left or what you had to endure between now and the end, but all you cared about was getting the gospel out.
Yeah, I want to get my book done.
Right.
And I want to share the gospel. We all come to points where that there's, possibly that life is going to terminate, and in many cases it does, obviously, from age zero all the way through to 125, there's not a moment, but in that time span that people's lives have not passed, either suddenly or they find out news such as I was finding out. And it was funny because I was sitting there on the sofa and I was not thinking about, gosh, I'm going to be so disappointed if my life ends. It's like, okay, I can handle at my exit. This is my exit. This is my exit. It's just that simple. But to exit before I get my book done was heartbreaking. And of course, my hope kicked in. Let me tell you something. Had all the hope in the world. But my definition of hope has evolved to something very powerful for me, and that is that in my hope, I knew that whatever the outcome was, that I would be fine, that no matter what the outcome was. I wasn't hoping that I would, live. I wasn't hoping, one way or the other. My hope was based in my definition of hope, and I will hold to it for the rest of my life because it has become something very powerful for me. And that is, my hope is that, no matter what the outcome is, I don't have to have a certain outcome to be fulfilled with my life. Because life offers changes, and so we got past that, and so then the weight was on. I've slept really good. In fact, I've slept more than usual, actually. and I wasn't having sleepless nights about, you know, getting this report back, which was already a foregone conclusion that I had cancer, according to the doctor. And I thought, you know, well, my mom died with cancer, my dad died with cancer, my aunts and my uncles died with cancer, and, you know, I'm no different. I'm just a human being, and these are the things that happen to human beings. So then on Monday we talked, and this was just yesterday. Yeah, that's right. It was just yesterday. So I'm, and there was only four people in my life that knew about this possible diagnosis, and I've, of course, I was questioning who I would even ever tell, you know, about such a thing, and it, you know, a lot depended on what the information came back. So I talked to Glenn yesterday morning, and Glenn asked me if I had heard from the doctor. And I said, well, no, I haven't heard from him yet. And he said, well, have you called the doctor? And I said, well, I didn't even think about that. And he said, well, you ought to think about that. So anyway, I said, well, I will. They didn't really tell me whether they'd call me or I should call them. They just told me that the lab reports would be back within a week or so, and to prepare myself for the worst. So I did call, and Angelica answered the phone, the doctor's nurse.
Angelica.
Carried on. Yes, Angelica.
Angelica.
We're coming up with a good testimony here.
Come on up.
So Angelica answered the phone, and she said, no, Mr. Williams, she says, your biopsy reports are not back. And she said they could be in by tomorrow evening, which is today. And I said, well, I'll be in transit to Canada or in Canada. And she said, well, that's fine. She says, I'll just call and leave a message on your phone, and then you can call me back from wherever you are, and we'll give you the results. So that was fine. I knew I was coming to Canada regardless of what was going to be the results on here. So then between 3:30 and 4 yesterday evening, the phone rang, and it was my dermatologist office calling. It was Angelica on the phone, and she said, is this Mr. Williams? And I said, yes. And she says, is this Michael Williams? And I said, yes. And she said, well, Mr. Williams, she said, I was wanting to call you to let you know that we do have the results back from your biopsy, and your report is here. And it's like, and all of this time is like moving through slow motion, you know, because
sure.
I am fully prepared. I am fully prepared to hear this and then say, well, thank you, but I've got to go pack my clothes now and get ready to go to Canada. And so finally she said, yes, she says, we have your report back. And the doctor removed, the pathology report says that he removed a benign tumor, which has no cancer cells at all. Zero cancer cells is what she said. And I almost fell over. I mean, I was so expecting to be hit by a 2x4, I still almost fell over because I was so braced for the worst. That's what I was told, was to brace myself for the worst.
When you call, Michael calls me up a little while later, and I just said, hello? And he said, benign, no cancer cells. And ladies and gentlemen, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I was speechless. And
he really was. I can attest to that.
I don't get speechless very often because our hope was for the worst, if you will.
Yep.
Whatever expectation we had was for something negative. And it turned out
that we'd deal with it from there.
And it turned out to be positive.
Yeah.
And so it just, I mean, obviously, it's a new lease on a productive life. As you said, Mike, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 minutes, for God's sake.
No, we sure don't.
But as far as something like this is pretty dramatic, and we're going to be talking a lot about the psychology of the gospel, as we often do, and as you have retold many stories of the time that you almost died from the allergic reaction of the bee bite and what your heart saw through that. But we're just, you know, so happy and thankful to report that the biopsy was negative. It was benign. It with no cancer cells. And as opposed to Michael facing this week with the potential of chemotherapy and radiation and who the hell knows what, coming home to Houston after the convention in Calgary, he's got a clean bill of health, and we wanted to share that with you. We're going to talk more about the emotional reaction and what went on and what that may portend for you as you contemplate and meditate the gospel. But I want to remind you that this is a special Tuesday night edition of Glenn Klein Online, the pre-convention preview. Michael live in Calgary, Alberta, as he gets ready to teach the entire book of Romans. We want to hear from you tonight, and we do have a caller online, our senior correspondent in Cincinnati, Ohio, the very lovely and talented Mr. Greg Ambergy. Gregory!
Wow, I'm lovely now?
You're lovely.
You've always been lovely, Gregory.
Am I lovely? Wow, cool.
I would like
to see
this is a gay man and a straight man.
Portrayal
of you, so it's very non sequitur.
That's
holy
right, but I would just like to see Glenn Klein speechless sometime.
Well,
that would be amazing.
Greg, I really did get to witness that.
So we do believe in miracles now.
Yes, we do, because the phone line went dead silent. I mean, there was no response. It was really funny.
Now, what would Pat Robertson say about this quote-unquote miracle? Would he have to turn it around and say that Satan is not finished with you, Mike, using you to deceive the church?
Satan's job in my life is not done.
Well, that is some great news, though. That is spectacular news. I just wanted to say one thing. I listened to last week's broadcast about four times, and this may not be the appropriate week to do this, but I didn't quite comprehend the bit about imputed, and I kept thinking that's really, really important. Why can't I get it? And so if you maybe in a future webcast or something want to elaborate.
No, let's do it right now. I think that's a great point. I don't know if we didn't do a good job explaining that or if we got onto something else a little bit faster than we should have.
I thought you guys had talked about it earlier and already kind of had the concept down, and I kept thinking, how stupid am I? I can't grasp what they're saying here. But we had a couple of other people who had asked about it. When I heard you talk about it.
We had a couple other people ask about it. They said that they didn't quite understand it.
Good. I don't feel so stupid then.
No, there's some other stupid people out there. So. I remember Greg. I remember people coming up to me in when I was teaching, and you know, a lot of people have some inkling about the gospel and or about grace, and over the years, one of my funnest situations that I've had was people coming up to me afterwards saying, "Oh, Brother Mike, thank you. It's so refreshing to know that somebody else is thinking like this. It's good to know I'm not crazy." And I said, "Well, it doesn't mean you're not crazy. It just means there's two of us now."
That's a good
point.
Well,
actually, this is a very good opportunity because you're going to be teaching on this concept of the imputed righteousness of God at the convention. So it gives you an opportunity to explain it.
Yes, it is the Book of Romans that, and my study for getting ready for this, that that stopped me in my tracks on the term imputed. Here's the difference. It's the same as, because here's where the comparison lies, and of course comparison is the means by which we learn, especially through Paul's teaching. And Paul taught in Romans that sin was in the world, that God had imputed sin to the entire human race, that when one man sinned, all have sinned. Right?
Okay, right.
All right. Okay, so we had that down. But now the interesting thing is, it says that after sin was imputed, it says, until the law, sin was not imputed until the law. Well, we know that God already counted everyone a sinner. But you see, the law was the one that was imputing the sin to the people as far as their understanding of it was concerned.
Oh, okay.
Everybody became a sinner at the moment. And as even as Paul said in Romans chapter 5, this comparison is the one that explains this digression from where I used to use the term imputed. So we have the actual relationship with sin because of the deed, sin because of the deed. And then until the law came, though, where and remember, the law was only given to give man a revelation of sin, to reckon themselves to be sinners. Because the law was pointing out the condition of sin. Remember Paul's big battle in Romans chapter 7 of him trying to deal with the issue of sin under the law, not as a Christian, which that chapter 7, I'm looking forward to teaching all the way through that this week. But he said, when the law came, sin revived and I died. Well, you see, sin was already there before the law came. But to his conscience is when the law came. Remember, he said, when I try to do good and I can't do it, and I try to keep from doing evil and I still go ahead and do it, he said, then I find a greater something else working in me. He said, I find that it is sin that is in me that is the problem, not my actions and deeds. So that point is where Paul gets sin imputed as far as his own understanding of it is concerned. So, in fact, the term imputed is the very same term where Paul uses in also in the book of Romans, that since what Christ has done, and because Christ is dead, he dieth to sin no more. Likewise, reckon, the term reckon is the exact same Greek word, reckon ye also yourselves to be dead unto sin. So, if I were going to use these words, which are translated as reckon and imputed, this is the way that I would use them to give greater clarity. God imputed righteousness to us. It is reckoned to us when we believe in Christ.
As salvation, actually. There's
absolutely
a reckoning of it. That's exactly right. It's part of the salvation process. Reckon, where, of course, the word recognize comes from. As opposed to, Michael, the way that you had been taught and the way that you had already always taught it, which was what? That imputed meant what?
Well, and it still does mean this. It's just that it doesn't mean it exclusively. It depends on the application. And that was that it is charged to or marked to or against one's account. It still means that.
Right, in this context, though, it means how somebody reckons it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, here's the tricky thing. Now, follow with me real closely on this. It's just like the term salvation. See, there is salvation that brings redemption.
See, salvation is not exclusively about the saving of the soul. Wherever the term salvation is used, it must be reflective of the subject. So is redemption salvation? Yes, redemption is a salvation. It is salvation. But then the salvation of the soul that is here because of the salvation of that has come to us, that redemption, the salvation that has brought redemption, now is the salvation that brings the saving of the soul. It is literally no different than the same as the application of the term saved. Saved means whatever, it means the same thing all the way through, but depending on where it is applied is what it's talking about. Imputed is the same. Imputed, it was imputed by God, but now it's imputed unto us, or reckoned unto us, if you will, through our belief and acceptance in the gospel and in Christ Jesus.
Well, that's awesome. And Greg, I know the fact that you brought this up is going to be even more important as the convention goes on, and Mike teaches this there. Because the more times, Michael, you know, we talk about something and teach about something, the clearer it becomes to us.
Absolutely.
Well, I have to tell a tale out of school here. I did share with Greg your circumstance that you were talking about before he came online. I told him what you were facing, Greg, being a close confidant of mine. With your permission, on Sunday I told him. And, of course, he was upset about it, but he did say something that I've shared with you, and I think it's germane for people listening right now. And Greg said, "Tell Mike I won't be praying for him."
Yeah, and that's the response I got out of it. I got a real chuckle out of it.
Yeah,
you know, my own sister, who I've been sharing the gospel with, she's never been a churchgoer, and she really is beginning to understand the gospel quite well. So I was very happy. See, I had this list of people that I already was preparing that I needed to call if I once the final diagnosis was in. I just did not want to say anything to anyone. And then it's still going to stay as much of a tight circle of people in my life that would even know about it. And of course, one was my sisters that I would want them to know. And so I called her. I told her the story, and she, do you know what her first response was to me? She said, "And I bet you didn't even pray about it, did you?" And I said, "You know what, Sharon? I didn't." Now, folks, you've got to understand, I don't have a moratorium on prayer for myself or anybody else. You've got to understand, if you want to pray for something the way you want to pray for it, how you want to pray for it, how many times you want to pray for it, you're not going to find an opposition from me. These are non-gospel issues as to whether or not you pray or do not pray. So do I have opinions about it? I have opinions about it, but they're non-gospel related. The gospel is not about whether or not somebody prays a certain way or doesn't pray a certain way, or whether somebody gets healed or don't get healed, or any of those things. It's just not the gospel. But she had learned enough from me to where that she said that. She said, "You know, I bet you didn't even pray." Well, you know, I've got one sister that was sharing all the stories about how they called the prayer chain from church to church to church, and somebody who had a it's probably pretty much the same thing I had, you know, was the bracing for the cancer, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Well, of course, that's a miracle. But, and I'm not even speaking to say that there's not such thing as miracles. That's quite all right. It's just the misuse of it and the abuse of it has destabilized people's lives much more than it has stabilized people's lives. So
when you've got to understand, when I say, when somebody like Greg Amberge says, tell Mike I'm not going to pray for him, and I can laugh about it. And then you've asked me the question, and my own sister says to me, and Mike, I bet you never even prayed about it, did you? She was so happy for me. But I said, well, actually, no. But you see, there wasn't a deliberate, I'm not going to pray about this. I don't know how to tell you what has happened in my heart that it just doesn't include those things. My prayer life is just gratefulness. It's thankfulness. And I think that the panorama that was in front of me was just thankfulness about any outcome that it's going to be.
Me that you were actually excited and anticipating the next chapter of your life.
Well, yeah, this is another adventure.
This is not easy to say. This is not pablum, ladies and gentlemen. This is not just a fly-by-night comment. These are the type of things that Michael was saying in the face of his physician telling him to prepare for the worst. This was not a front. This was not any kind of false bravado. This was reality. I was sharing this with Tim Pruitt this evening about what had happened, what Michael has just shared. And Tim said to me, he said, well, in a very real way, the response of not praying for the circumstance is a greater manifestation of faith than praying for it.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, I said, that's pretty deep, bro. And see, yeah. Folks, as Michael said, this is not a gospel issue. We're just sharing our experience. We're sharing our opinions. We're welcoming your opinions, whether it be through the toll-free number, through the webcast at gospelrevolution.com email address. We want to hear from you, your thoughts. We want to hear your insights. We want to hear your opinions. We're just sharing what's going on in our heart. Greg, I know that you love Mike and that you love the message and the ministry, but what's going through your head that made you say, tell Mike I'm not going to pray for him?
Well, I think George Najjar got me thinking about that. I haven't talked to George. I don't really know him at all. But, with what he's gone through with his son, and I don't want to share that on the broadcast, but that got me thinking about our response to when scary times come, whether it's health or finances or when bad things come, what is our response? And, I thought that George had made sort of a similar comment when talking about his son's health.
Yeah.
And I thought it showed that the gospel is probably having a really intense impact on George's life. It's one thing to say it about yourself, but I mean, I know that if it were my child, the desperation you feel if somebody is facing a severe illness.
I think that is the key word for us, at least where we're at right now, is that to pray would reflect, Michael, on a certain level of desperation. And when your soul's been saved and is in the process of being saved, if there's anything that you have articulated and manifested to me over the last 2 weeks, is a lack of desperation. The only thing that you might have been guilty of being desperate about was your desire to get this message out before the final curtain closes.
Yeah.
That's powerful, yeah, dude.
Well, it was for me, and it's interesting that to pray or not to pray never crossed my mind. I cannot tell you the difference between what the gospel has done and what evangelical Christianity did. evangelical Christianity created panic, uncertainty, and an attempt to attach my hopes to a certain outcome. Now, by attaching my hopes to a certain outcome, that created all of the anxiety and the panic. Because if you attach your hope to a certain outcome, then what are you going to do if this don't happen this way? But here's the thing. I don't even know that I can say it properly. I'm telling you, the gospel is so powerful. At times, at many occasions, it eludes my ability to articulate it in intelligible words. But what the gospel has done in my heart is that I no longer attach my hopes, whether you call it hopes or faith or whatever, I don't attach them to a certain outcome. Hope for me is that regardless of the outcome, I'm going to be okay. And that, for some reason, releases me from the anxiety of the possible situation, whatever it might be. I think the greatest thing that I experienced during this almost 2-week ordeal was just absolute peace. It just was irrelevant. And I know that that sounds really, really strange. I knew one thing, that if it was cancer, I was going to enter into a new adventure in my life that I'd never been through.
And you said it. You didn't just think it, you said it. And then
I
you had a level of excitement and anticipation. This is something that is very hard to relate to, I know, folks. But it's something that can come with the meditation of this message of God's righteousness. Gregory, you got anything else?
That's all I've got. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, buddy.
We'll
be talking to you soon. Thanks,
everybody.
Thanks so much for calling.
All right.
Well, we'll tell them, Greg.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, there's Greg Amberge, ladies and gentlemen. We've still got a quarter hour left here on Glenn Klein Online. Time for you to call in at 1-800-436-3260. Sean is waiting to take your call, get you online right away. It was a long conversation, but I think a worthwhile one. 1-800-436-3260. 800-436-3260. Is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. We want to hear from you, and as always, as I said, you can email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Michael, your stance on this circumstance and prayer and just going through this, we're being very frank and open with people and honest with the experience. But there's no sense that I get anyway of any kind of superiority or spirituality or anything like that in going through this experience. But it's something that we need to share with people.
Well, you know, the issue of this gospel, number one, the thing I will always stick to is just sharing the gospel. But when things come up that I believe are things that are gospel influenced, such as this, I tell you, I can remember a time, and that's not great many of years ago, I would have freaked out at such news. I really would have.
Right,
and
you pointed
I would
out
have
to me.
Wanted.
You pointed out to me that normally when you have had stressful situations in your life, that was followed by sleeplessness.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
With all due candor, that not only had you been sleeping well, but that you had been sleeping even more and better than you normally have.
I really did go through a phase of that, of... not just sleeping well at night, some wonderful little naps on my sofa during the day. And not that I had not taken them before, but you know, these really were, it was just a very, I was comforted. I don't know how else to tell you. I was comforted. I had comfort. I was at peace. And, I think the only odd thing about it was I was so absolutely prepared for a cancer diagnosis, as my doctor told me to, that the shock was benign, zero cancer cells is what she said, zero cancer cells. And again, of course, I didn't ask any questions, which I know Glenn Klein would have had a few. But I just said, okay. And then, you know, we hung up the phone. And this sensation went through my body, and it was, it's almost like what I would have expected had somebody called and told me I had cancer, you know, because I was almost flush. It's kind of like being prepared to get hit by a tube before, and then you don't. It's like you've gone away. So... but it was quite an experience, and I know the change in me as far as dealing with things like that. Let me tell you something, folks. I made the statement many years ago that I believe the most fundamental part of us is not spiritual. It is not the mind. I think that the most fundamental part of us is emotional. And the one thing that I can tell you beyond the shadow of a doubt is that the number one area of my life that the gospel has affected is my emotional well-being. Regardless of the circumstances, that my emotional well-being. Now, I could get, and let me tell you something, I'm not standing here offering you myself as an example. I could get hit by something tomorrow and you'd find me crying in the corner and babbling and off to the mental institution. I am not saying this is something that separates me from anybody else whatsoever. I'm just simply sharing this experience that happened at this time. And you know, and as you brought up, Glenn, it did have a reflection back to 2003, I believe it was. 2003, whenever I, yes, 2003, when I got the bee sting, April the 1st, in 2003. And then I realized my bee sting kit wasn't with me. So, and I remember that's the first time I had experienced peace and tragedy, or peace and possible tragedy. I was totally shocked by that response. And this one was like that one on steroids. I don't even know how to explain it. But, again, please, I'm not trying to portray to people that I'm this tower of emotional strength. My closest friends know my weaknesses, and I still got them. They are definitely still there. But something has happened to me that has caused me to deal with crisis completely differently, and I believe a majority of the reason for that is that I have no expectations of a certain outcome having to be for me to exist and survive. I can live with whatever it is.
Yeah, I think, you know, from my standpoint, it seems like that your emotional responses to things are much more sensitive to the getting out of this message than it is to anything personal. And it's not that you don't roll with the punches within the ministry and with this effort. You do, of course. But it seems like you get more wound up about the effort to get this thing out that we call the gospel, that the Bible calls the gospel, the good news, than you do about personal situations. It's not that you don't get emotionally involved in other situations, but I think that something happens inside the human heart that balances out normal human circumstances that that don't happen without the gospel. And
the one thing, Glenn, one thing I don't want people to think is that I am not now a non-emotional person. You've got to realize this same person who didn't talk any different when I talked to you about the this cancer issue than what I'm talking right now, then I am the same person that, remember, I just a couple of months ago, I told people when I heard Kate's CD for the first time, and I heard this gospel being sang back to me, I cried like a baby sitting on my sofa. So it's not like I have developed a hardness. Far from it. I think my heart is even, if it could be more tender, but the fact of it is, I still have a tender heart. It's just that it doesn't suffer over the things I have no control over.
That is a powerful statement, because I think that's right. I think the things that you have some level of involvement in, beyond, you know, what attitude a person can take, that somehow the gospel has come in, and without, as you pointed out on many occasions, without any effort of your own, has released you from the responsibility for those situations.
Yeah, it really has, and I think that really is the thing, you know, for me, is, let me tell you something, I am known as a crier. I am not known as a non-crier. People know that about me. But, man, these things that there just is, and I really do believe that there's an awful lot that I'm learning from this, that when I realize that these things, see, spirit, super, let me try to say this word again, superficial spirituality gives you the illusion that you're in control of things you are not in control of. And those things where I feel that I have that control, or should have control, and all of this, there is emotion, but the gospel has set me free to know things that I am not in control of, and that there's not a degree of prayer or anything else that's going to put me in control, and therefore there's peace.
And therefore, that is germane to the comments we had about prayer before.
Yeah.
Because this goes beyond our control. And I think that even things, this can extend, or maybe even should extend, to things that seemingly are within our control or within the purview of our responsibilities. It just sets things into a perspective that allows you to deal with them more effectively. That's what it seems like, ladies and gentlemen. That's what they should recommend. I did see a sign one time at a church. You know, we had our thing on the God Revolution web page, the signs of the times, with all the different church signs. And we love getting those, which are just some of the most ridiculous, absurd things that you ever read in your life. But one church sign that I always remember, I know where the church is down here in Tampa, and it said, whatever angers you controls you. And that was a very powerful message to me. And not that this life can be without anger, but Michael, when somebody is in anger, they are out of control. That is for sure.
I can tell you from experience that is true. No doubt, no doubt. You know,
well,
you brought that
up. Well,
we are
very jealous of all those that will be gathering for the Gospel Revolution Convention the third annual in Calgary, and our host up there is online with us right now from beautiful Calgary. Mr. Vic Dobrennan's online with us as we close this preview of the convention. Vic!
Hi, how you doing?
Vic, how excited are you for the next 5 days?
Having supper with Mike, and we went downstairs and had a look at all the facilities, and everything is in readiness. We're looking forward to a good time. Celebration.
Yep. It's going to be a gospel party.
It is.
Vic bought me pie a while ago.
Yeah, it is.
What kind of pie did you have?
I had apple pie with ice cream and a cup of coffee.
Nice. That is a good all-American dessert in Canada.
It's pretty well all Canadian dessert, too.
So you ready to rock and roll, Vic?
Yeah, we are. You know, we totally are. I think we've got things ready to go, and so yeah, we're looking forward to some fantastic fellowship and great teaching and celebrating freedom in life, our humanity.
Yep.
Celebrating our humanity with all our little quirks and quarks that the gospel has set us free with. So, yeah,
for those of you folks that are within striking distance of Calgary, get over there to the Carriage House. Just go to gospelrevolution.com. All the information, the address, phone numbers, it's all there. And if you can't make it for Wednesday or Thursday, certainly come in for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Just get over there to the Carriage House in beautiful Calgary, Alberta.
And actually, we're going to have some decent weather, too, right now, so the weather is cooperating. I think we're going to have a little bit of
what is the temperature Celsius scale?
Pardon me?
What is the temperature Celsius right now?
Celsius, we're about between 15 and 20.
Ooh, that sounds pleasant.
Yeah, it's nice. It's around 65 degrees. So. And actually, you know, we actually had a tornado warning here this afternoon.
Really?
That is very unusual.
Get some rest, my brother.
Flew over rather quickly.
Get some rest, my brothers, because you guys have a big 5 days coming up.
Yeah.
We'll make it, won't we, Vic?
What's that?
I said we will make it, won't we?
Yes, we will. We certainly will.
Well, thanks for doing all this, Vic. Cannot thank you enough. So much appreciated.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. So, no worries there. Just the joy of doing it.
Yes, it's fun.
So.
Well, we cannot wait to hear the full report next week, and not to mention to hear the entire teaching on the book of Romans. It's going to be good. It's going to be very good. So thanks, fellas.
So, okay, well, I'll let you go. And to everybody who's listening, look forward to everybody coming out here.
No doubt.
Great.
Thanks, Vic.
Thanks,
talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Here's Vic Dobrennan, ladies and gentlemen, the host of Grace Conferences there in Alberta. Get ready for the Gospel Revolution Convention, the third annual. Have fun, Mikey.
Thanks, Glenn. Thank you so much for tonight, and thanks for being my confidant through my little cancer event. So
yeah, it was not a little event, but it was an event. Want to also thank Greg Ambergy calling from Ohio and Sean O'Halloran in our studios here in Tampa Bay. Until next week, have a great week, everybody. For those of you that are going to the convention, have a great time. Give Mikey a hug for us. We will talk to you in 1 week's time. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody.